Blog Talk Radio.
And we are live on Fans for Racing, NASCAR, and Race Talk Review. This is for Michigan, Mid-Ohio, and Evergreen. So we have a lot of racing to cover here tonight with a great guest lineup. Joining me tonight for our show is our co-host, James Bickford. Welcome to the show, James.
Hey, thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be back for the second time and have another two times lined up. So I'm looking forward to the show.
I am too. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about racing over these next 3 weeks, and I think we'll have a little bit of fun along the way as well. So let's go over our lineup for tonight, because in between guests, we're going to be doing our review of the racing that took place this weekend. But at 8:40, our guest is a four-time winner now this season in the Can-Am Pro Series West is Chris Eggleston. He's just 6 points away from the points leader, Todd Gilliland, now. And this is a really tight battle that's taking place out there in the K&N West.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see the first two cars dominate, and then you have the third-place driver that I believe is 74 points from third, is what the leader to third place is. So it's kind of interesting to see two guys dominate, Todd Gill and Chris Eggleston, and should be interesting to see what team in the West is going to be able to step up and compete with those two, and if they're going to be able to pull off some wins towards the end of season.
Absolutely. They've been dominating all season long, and there's just a few more races left in their season, so you're right. It's going to be interesting as their season continues to wind down to see how this all plays out. That's Chris Eggleston at 8:40 p.m. Eastern Time. At 9 o'clock, we have Camping World Truck Series driver Noah Gregson is going to be joining us. So we haven't had Noah on for a while, so I'm looking forward to catching up with him. Noah's doing pretty well in the Camping World Truck Series. He's in the top 10 in the series point standings, and he had a top 10 finish this weekend at Michigan International Raceway as well, or Michigan International Speedway.
Yeah, and then next up, Matt Bell. He was the driver of the number 90 Xfinity car this weekend. Had a great car for the race, was moving up through the field, but unfortunately a mechanical issue led to the end. Be interesting to talk with him because he's a combination IMSA and NASCAR driver and has had multiple starts in the Xfinity series as well as a full competitor in the IMSA series. So looking forward to talking to him as well.
I agree. I can't wait to talk with him and talk a little bit about what happened this weekend, but also, you know, about his IMSA season, the 2017 season for him. He's been having a pretty good run here in IMSA. So with that, let me ask you, James, what was your highlight of racing this weekend in NASCAR?
There's so many. The young talent at Michigan International Speedway with Kyle Larson taking home the win, and then Eric Jones finishing third, Chris Buescher having his best finish of sixth. It's just really interesting to see the young talent in the Cup Series. And then you have return winner Sam Warnes Jr. at Mid-Ohio with Hemric and Tiff, Matt Tiff, Daniel Hemric and Matt Tiff finishing second and third. And that would be definitely the highlight, is seeing the younger guys coming through the series winning at very high levels. We have Noah Gregson coming on, finishing in the top 10, and then, you know, the Bubba Wallace winning. It's just interesting to see how much is shaping in the sport of NASCAR. And the new talent that we're seeing that's going to be dominating the series five years from now, if not even sooner than that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. There's so many great things that happened this weekend. It's hard to pick just one highlight. But if I were to pick one, I agree with everything that you said. I love seeing the younger drivers coming up through the series and doing so well. It was great to see Sam Hornish win at his home track in Ohio. And I think for me, though, I could not believe the end of the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race with Kyle Larson. I think he astounded everybody with his car control at the end of that race and to pull off that victory. That was pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The car control at Michigan International Speedway is already at another level, as you can see in practice with so many cars wrecking out. You know, you're on the edge the entire time going that fast at 218 in the race, 215 miles per hour. And to see Kyle Larson have the car control he did at such high speeds and so close to the edge, it's really interesting to see a driver like that be able to pull off moves and clutch situations towards the end of a race.
He certainly was in a clutch situation there. And what's amazing, too, is that he had raced the night before in the Knoxville Nationals. He finished second there, came home at, 2:30 in the morning. He arrived back at MIS to be able to race the Monster Energy Cup Series race on Sunday. So he did all of that with a very little sleep. And after finishing second in the Knoxville Nationals, I thought, wow, that had to be an amazing weekend for him.
Yeah, I would say Chip Ganassi's reaction probably showed some emotion that Kyle Larson was feeling inside. That was another huge topic. I would say if I had to decide a highlight moment this week for racing, it would definitely be Chip Ganassi's reaction, giving a few of his crew members whiplash and then, you know, clocking Kyle Larson right aside the head. That's probably the most interesting and greatest highlight this week.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that, it's amazing. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, my God, he's going to give that guy whiplash. The crew chief, when he was so happy at the victory, and then Kyle Larson's comments afterward when he saw him down on the track after he got the checkered flag, he said, I think he just clocked me. Hit him on the side of the head there. But, yeah, it was pretty amazing, Chip Ganassi Racing, how excited he was for that victory. And it just gives you a feel for what it means across the board for teams when they are able to pull off those victories. And I thought that was pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, to see the passion that even a car owner has, not even the driver in the car, the passion that they have, it really represents the whole team and really what it feels like to win a NASCAR Cup Series race, a Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race. It's really amazing when you get to capture moments like that and see the excitement that, you know, not only the crew but also the car owner, in this case Chip Ganassi, has winning a race, especially at Michigan International Speedway.
Okay, I totally agree. Now, also, our guest coming up here in just a couple minutes, Chris Eggleston, came home with his fourth victory this season in the NASCAR Can-Am Pro Series West. And we've talked about this a little bit there at the beginning when we were bringing up that it's a very tight battle going on in that series between Chris Eggleston and his teammate at Bill McAnally Racing. It's pretty amazing because Todd Gilliland started off the season with a lot of victories, and now Chris Eggleston, both of them are previous champions in the Can-Am West. And the fact that they are battling each other for that title out this season has been pretty spectacular to watch.
Well, let's for the listeners at home and the fans, you know, paying attention right now, let me read some statistics for you. Average start this year in the K&N West, 2.5 with an average finish of 2.7. He has led 398 laps, two poles. This is unbelievable performance from the Bill McInerney Racing Team. And even with those numbers, he is second in points. So that just sums up how competitive it is right now being part of that top two for K&N West. I mean, average finish of 2.7. That is top three average and better. That words cannot even describe what that is. You know, even a dominant season for K&N West driver, usually if they're running away with the championship, having any less than a four average finish. So just to put that in perspective for the listeners at home, what an amazing season Bill McInerney Racing has had, and especially Chris Eggleston this year in 2017.
Absolutely. It really is remarkable. And he's here now, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him into the queue. Chris, I don't know if you've been listening, but we've really been talking you up here and the kind of season that you're having there at Bill McInerney Racing. And this weekend you came home with your fourth victory in the K&N West. And can it get any better than this, Chris?
It can, and that would include us taking over the points lead, I would say, by the end of the year. But I caught the tail end of what James hit on, and to be honest with you, that the first time I heard that statistic was earlier today. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of crazy that, you know, someone like myself could have such a good finishing average and be sitting second in the points, you know, not too far out from points leader Todd Gilliland. But nevertheless, I mean, it's been a remarkable season, not only for ourselves on the 99 Napa Filters team, but just Bill McInerney Racing as a whole, Todd, Derek, everybody's just worked really hard back at the shop at Roseville, and everybody's put their front foot forward and just done everything that they could. And it's just been a really good season. Just be really, really happy and thankful to be a part of it.
Now,
absolutely.
Chris,
you're just 6 points away right now from Todd Gilliland in the series point standings. And you're right. The way it gets better is if you can take over those point standings. So talk a little bit about that. You've got a couple more races coming up here. Where do you see your best opportunity?
Yeah, so we go to a lot of tight little quarter-mile tracks for the next three races, which are kind of like the Talladega for K&N racing in the sense that anything can happen. You can kind of get tied up in somebody else's mess, and it's just really tight quarter racing. So we just got to make sure we do everything we can to be aggressive and go after those wins, because that's the only way we're going to win this championship with how good Todd and that whole 16 Napa Auto Parts team is. But at the same time, we got to do everything we can not to jeopardize a good finish, a good points night. I mean, we're getting to the end of the season here where obviously every point counts now that it's so close. I feel like our short track program with Ty Joyner as our crew chief calling the shots has been really strong all year. I'm so pumped and excited to have the speed that we did at Evergreen. Even Iowa, even a third place finish at Iowa, I considered a win for myself, because beyond that, I think our best finish was, I mean, it was terrible. I mean, I felt like it was like 20th or something overall. So I feel really good about going into the quarter mile stuff. I feel like we're going to run really strong and really good. We've learned a lot throughout last season and this season to make our 99 team better. And so, again, we just need to make sure we're aggressive. And although second places and third place finishes are really good and highly thought upon, we got to continue to go after those wins, because that's where all the bonus points are. We got to lead laps. We got to lead the most laps. With how tight these points are and how fast Todd is, like I said, we just got to go after those wins to make sure we do everything we can to make sure we're in contention going into the season finale at Kern. Which I also feel really strong and good about.
Now, Chris,
okay,
you won
James,
your second start. Yeah, yeah. So, Chris, you won in your second start in K&N and Colorado Speedway in 2014, but dominance was never questioned from the start. But now you're in a different position. How does it feel as a driver to be so dominant in such a stellar series compared to years before where you're competing full time?
Yeah, for sure. It's a dream come true. You know, I grew up, you know, watching the K&N series, as I'm sure you did as well, James. And it's one of those series where you always see big names come out of that series and go on to do big and great things, whether it's, you know, Kyle Larson, Darrell Wallace Jr., truck winner this past weekend, Chase Elliott, I think Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano. I mean, a lot of big names have come out of that series. And other big names that maybe didn't make it as far but have a really stellar statistic win column or has been a legend in that series, if you will, include like people like Greg Pursley, Eric Holmes, Dylan Kwasniewski, who went on to the Xfinity deal. You know, it's cool to kind of put your name in those categories and win a bunch of races in such an elite series and highly thought upon series. And to be honest with you, I never thought I'd be in this position with this opportunity, but just so thankful and grateful for the people that I guess we somehow got ourselves surrounded around, which all began, like you mentioned, in 2014, where I got my foot in the door with one of the best K&N West teams there are when we were able to go out and win in Colorado on a one-off deal. And just never thought it would turn into this, let alone a championship in 2015 and having this opportunity to drive for Bill for the last 3.5 years. We're there. We're in contention for this championship. We're not giving up. Halfway through the season, when Todd kind of went on that stretch, I was getting a little doubtful. I didn't lose hope, but it was getting a little scary how dominant the 16 team was. And I don't know. After Evergreen, I've got a whole new perspective and outlook on this championship, and I'm really excited to go to work on it.
Okay. I think we have Sal here. He called in. Did you have a question, Sal, for Chris Eagleson?
Yeah, Sharon. It's kind of weird being on this side of the fence, but I'm gonna give it a shot. I don't know how it'll come out, but first off, I want to thank James for, you know, for stepping in, you know, while I'm, you know, on my little hiatus. James, thanks a lot, you know, for stepping in and I know that you and Sharon will do a really great job. Chris, first of all, congratulations again on the dominating win. Gosh, it was really neat, you know, to see the 99 back to victory lane. And so far, I've been fortunate that I've been at both races that you've been in victory lane in. But my question is, you know, you guys unload, you know, you get out there on the track, and it's a teammate that's struggling. You know, Todd struggled all weekend. You know, he just really couldn't find a handle on the car. You know, you guys unloaded. You guys went out to practice. You know, and you know, it seemed like you guys had a fast car. Now, being teammates, you both are fighting for the championship, and I know the camaraderie actually between all three of you. When it's finally time for the green flag to drop, knowing, you know, that Todd's having struggles, you know, knowing, you know, like you just said right now, you know, the wins are big, you know, with the bonus points, did that kind of give you just like a little more extra incentive, you know, to go out and really fight even that much harder for the win?
It was, I agree. It all started Friday when we unloaded off of the trailer. And without, you know, race monitors or transponders on the cars, it was really hard to gauge where everyone is as far as, like, speed charts go and stuff like that. Because if anybody's ever been to Evergreen Speedway, they know and understand that it's like a cheese grater out there. It just kills tires. And so although you may be faster than one car five laps into a run, if you sit in the pits or, say, make another 10-lap run and somebody next door to you has 10 laps fresher tires than you do and are running a tenth or two faster than you, it's really hard to gauge where you sit. And so I knew we had a good piece as far as a race car standpoint goes. We fought the handling a little bit on Friday, and I felt like Ty and all the guys at Bill McAnally Racing did a really good job fine-tuning it. And to kind of see the 16 struggle off obviously was uncharacteristic for them because they've been really good everywhere they went, and I know they worked really hard to get it right. And I felt like they had got it to where Todd was happy with it because at the end of the first session, or I should say the segment, Todd had marched all the way up to second place and was kind of catching us there at the end of that first segment right before the halfway break. And, you know, I really thought he was going to be stronger than he was in the second run. And I think he kind of faded back on purpose on the second run to conserve tires, just applying a different strategy, and unfortunately cut a right front down and went a lap down and you know, kind of dampened his good run and good finish that he had going for him. But nevertheless, I mean, when you have a great car like that and are able to stay atop of the speed charts, qualify on the pole, it almost becomes like a hindrance. Like, man, how am I going to screw this up? Here we've got a really fast Napa Filters Toyota me as a driver, how am I going to screw this up? And thankfully, everybody pulled together, everybody did their job, and we were able to park it in victory lane.
And actually, just one more question, Sharon, for him. You know, Chris, the very last two caution flags, Will Rogers, you know, started making a move on you, and it seemed like, you know, I didn't check the speeds, but it seemed like he was maybe a tad faster. And then especially for that last restart, you know, I mean, man, you nailed that last restart. Do you feel that if you had nailed it, that maybe if we would have gotten around you, that might have been the race right there?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when that caution came out, you know, I just think to myself, like, I forget what radio show that is that they host on, like, Race Hub, where they do all the explicit radio interviews where they got to bleep everybody out. I'm pretty sure I would have made that show when that yellow came out, because more or less, like, you got it in your head, like, of course the yellow came out. Are you kidding me? With one or two laps to go, like, are you kidding me? And I'm sure we would have had to bleep some of that radio out. And more or less, to your point, Will Rogers has done an exceptional job. I really have a lot of respect for him and what that whole JPR team is doing. Not only him, but Taylor Riddle was really good in the first segment. And the way Will Rogers played that race, I thought was really good and smart. And everything that we tried to do is we tried to manage that gap as the best we could without abusing our tires, knowing that Todd was kind of fading back, trying to save his tires. And then when that yellow did come out, I mean, it was a true test on did we save enough or not. And it was going to be the restart of a lifetime, obviously, to make sure we stayed in contention to win that race. And I don't think I had the best restart, but it was good. And Will drove in really, really hard. And we got together a little bit. He did everything he could and should have done to win that race. And it just seemed like the top groove was a little better, and we were able to prevail out of two. We got a really good run out of two and kind of drop the hammer and get a couple of car length buffer zone to take the checkered flag. But yeah, absolutely, Sal. It was definitely in the back of my head that Will was marching up right through there. And I thought he was going to steal a win away from us, and just really glad and happy that it all worked into our favor, I guess.
Okay. Well, congrats again. Thanks again, James, for everything. Sharon, thanks for everything. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and hang up, and thanks for letting me have a couple questions. You guys have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Okay,
so
James.
Following up with that, talking about speed charts, who are you most concerned about, besides Todd Gillen, because that's a given, who's your strongest competitor when you're going to a track? Who are you fighting the most, and who are you looking in your rearview mirror for on the track?
Yeah, it's kind of tough because, you know, as James, as you know, like every driver has, I feel like, their strong suits on the tracks that they're good at. You know, for me, Evergreen and like Orange Show in Colorado, the flatter tracks with a lot of character, some bumps, worn out racetracks just kind of fit my driving style. And I feel like other drivers have certain racetracks that suit them best as well. And since we haven't raced on a quarter mile in a long time, I've kind of lost sight and track on who's really good at those short tracks. As you mentioned, you know, Todd's going to be really good at every race we go to from here on out. Teammate Derek Krause driving the Carlisle Tools Toyota, he's shown a lot of speed everywhere we've gone, and I know he's going to be strong at the next remaining, four races we got left. Like I mentioned, like Will Rogers and the JPR cars, I'm not sure who's going to be in the 27 for the remainder of the season and or anybody's in the 55, but I feel like that team is just getting a lot stronger each and every race, and you can never count those guys out. Obviously, Michael Self, Julia Landauer, and the Sunrise 4 team, the team that you drove for, James, with Bob Brancati, they're always strong everywhere they go. So I would say between all those guys and those drivers, I mean, there's a lot of talent in the West Series, and you never know how you're going to shake up. You always got to have that in the back of your head and know that it's going to take a lot of work and effort to be competitive at the remaining races. And like I said, I'm going to want to make sure we do everything we can in our power as a whole with the 99 team to make sure we bring fast race cars and chase those wins.
Awesome.
Oh, did you have another question, James?
Yeah, we'll get this one real quick before you have to go. So getting away from the track, how do you spend your time when you aren't at the track? What do you do when you're not inside of a race car?
Right. So, I mean, back home in Colorado, I've got a super late model, and I still have a legend car that I've had and for like a really long time, and Man, most of the nights, along with tonight, we're up here at the race shop working on race cars. We're getting ready for a big super late model race in Salt Lake City here in a couple of weeks that pays $10,000 to win, and fixing up our legend car to go racing this weekend as well. I think we're going to race a mod coupe this weekend for another guy. So, man, just racing is in my blood ever since I was 5 years old, racing quarter midgets like yourself, James. And for some reason, I can't seem to get away from it at 28 years old. Been doing it all my life. And after work, you know, after you clock out, it's pretty much the only thing I know how to do. I guess that's why my grass is a lot longer than my neighbors, and I always have laundry to do because I pretty much live at the race shop. But it's always been in my blood, and I feel like it's a great thing to do, get together with other crew guys and friends and work and build fast race cars. And so, yeah, other than that, you know, obviously we live in Colorado with a lot of great outdoor activities. I love spending time with my wife, going up to the mountains, hiking, mountain biking, and once the racing season quits, we'll probably start playing some hockey around here. And just, man, it always seems like we're always doing something.
Well, Chris, again, congratulations on your victory and the success that you're having this season in the Can-Am Pro Series. It's really amazing, and we can't wait to see what happens in these next four races with you guys there at Bill McAnally Racing. Right now you're all 1, 2, and 3 in the series point standings. And before you go, just make sure fans know how they can follow you and any other shout-outs that you want to make sure you give before you sign off here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got a website of my own, chriseggletonracing.com. And like most guys on the social media world, we've got Chris Eggleston on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat. I think all our handles are the same, Chris Eggleston _. So you can always follow along, tune in to see what we're doing on race weekend. And beyond that, I mean, hats off and so thankful for everybody at Napa Filters and Toyota and everybody at Bill McAnally Racing for working so hard. That car that we just won with this past weekend, it was a brand new car in Iowa. So Evergreen was only the second race on it, and just so proud of the speed it had early in its racing career. Just look forward to tacking on a couple more wins for that car.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to watching, that's for sure. And you never know. You may be coming back for another visit before it's all said and done, Chris.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, and I really hope we can make that happen.
Okay, us too. You take care, and good luck in your next race here.
All right. Thanks, guys, for having me on your program. James, great hearing from you and talking to you. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Take care now. All right. That was Chris Eggleston, four-time winner in the Can-Am Pro Series, just 6 points away from the points leader, Todd Gilliland. And that's going to be exciting to watch as these guys finish out this season in these last four events that are taking place. Now, coming up, James, we have Noah Gregson coming on from the Camping World Truck Series. That was another race that was really fun to watch. Darrell Wallace Jr. ended up winning the race. He wasn't even sure if he was going to have a ride, and this opportunity came up. He went out there and raced in the Truck Series and brought home the victory. Pretty exciting to watch that happen.
Yeah, it was a fantastic race. It's great to watch Bubba get back into a car and be able to win after being out of a ride for a little bit of time. We have our guests lined up, if anybody's noticed. Can-Am Pro Series, Camping World Trucks, Xfinity. I guess all we needed is a Cup driver. But anyways, I'm looking forward to talking to Noah. He moved and progressed from the Can-Am Pro Series from last year, and it's going to be interesting to see what he has to say about the differences between the two divisions.
Yes, indeed. And talking about Noah Gregson, he finished seventh in the race this weekend. He finished seventh in the race this weekend. He's ninth in the series point standings, and he's racing with Kyle Busch Motorsports, who we all know is an organization that really has their stuff together. And Noah is with us right now, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him into the queue. Hey, Noah, welcome back to Fan for Racing Radio. We haven't talked to you in a while. Really looking forward to chatting with you here tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's talk about your Camping World Truck Series season so far. We were just mentioning your finish this weekend out at MIS and your ninth in the series point standings. How are you feeling about your season so far with Kyle Busch Motorsports in the Camping World Truck Series?
Honestly, I'm kind of bummed out on the way everything's gone so far. It's kind of been rough for me, just learning about the different aero on the mile and a half and 2 mile long racetrack. So it's been difficult learning curve for myself. Just coming racing the K&N series the last 2 years, I felt like we had some good runs there with a couple wins. So it's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, for sure.
Okay, and as you know, our co-host tonight is James Bickford, so I'm going to pass the mic over to James. I know he had some questions for you.
Yeah, I mean, don't sell yourself short. 2 pole awards, that's fantastic. 2 top 5s, 9 top 10s, only 19 years old like myself, but you spoke about it a little bit, but we'll go into it in more depth. What, for you, were the most difficult challenges moving up into National Series racing? You know, going from the K&N Pro Series to the Camping World Truck Series, where the level of competition is much different. And at the same time, like you talked about, you're at bigger tracks where aero is playing in. What are the other difficulties and challenges that you face as a driver moving up?
First off, Bickford, I'm with Mikey Womack. He wants me to tell you what's up.
What's up? What's going on,
James? How's it going, guys?
And I'm with Zane. But, yeah, to answer your question, it's just been just learning that mile-and-a-half aero stuff. It's different than the K&N racing, where you're basically mostly going to half-mile-long racetracks. And the team I was with, Jefferson Pitts Racing, felt like we ran pretty good. I finished second to James Bickford. He waxed all of us in 2015 at Shasta – or not Shasta – State Line Speedway. He won it 2 years in a row. So I guess just learn how to race momentum in the dirty air.
All right. So this is getting fun really, really quick. You have some interesting JBL audio videos. If anybody hasn't seen them, it's where Noah Gregson gets to show off his amazing talent of singing and performing. Now for you, if you could perform a show or be on a game show to perform a song, what would that song be?
I'd probably go on a game show or a thing. I'd probably go on, like, America's Got Talent, because I got, like, a lot of talent behind the microphone, not just, like when I key up on the radio, but when I'm singing, like, on the JBL deal. I was pretty good. So, I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't really want to crush those guys on America's Got Talent too badly. I feel like I'd get the golden buzzer, like, right away. If I just sung a few notes, they'd be like, dang, that guy's pretty damn good. I'm going to give him the golden buzzer. He's going straight to the live shows.
And what song would that be that you would perform and blow everybody out of the water for?
Probably All Me by Drake.
Would that be your walk-up song to Bristol?
No, my walk-up song would probably be Bubblegum by Rashida.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting stuff. I'm going to pass the questions on. We'll settle it down a little bit here. I'm sure we want to ask more questions about your racing, but that's definitely interesting with the JBL audio partnership and Noah's great singing career that he has. Maybe a second career path.
Little did we know, Noah. We'll have to hear that at some point. You'll have to sing some tunes for us. Let me get it back into the race. Pardon me?
I said maybe next time on the singing.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's talk about the upcoming races. I agree, first of all, with what James said to you. Don't sell yourself short. You've got to. I think, you know, you're racing in the Camping World Truck Series. It's a huge adjustment from the K&N Pro Series to come into the Camping World Truck Series. And I think you're really holding your own. I'm proud of what you've done in the Camping World Truck Series so far this season, but I can appreciate how challenging it is for you because you're doing great in the Can-Am West and everything. But take a look at the races that are coming up on the schedule. Are there any races that you kind of got circled, and why do you have that particular track circled that you're maybe looking forward to racing?
Yeah, definitely circled Canada. The guys at KBM, they brought me, or they're building me actually, a brand new road course truck. So they built Christopher a dirt truck for this year for Eldora, and I felt like I'm one of the guys who can contend for the race win at Canada on the road course. So they're building me a road course truck, a brand new one, and definitely going to be, I feel like, one of the races that we're going to be really good at this year. I won a couple of road course races last year in K&N, East and West, and I really like them. So just thankful for the opportunity that they were able to kind of step up and build that new truck and give me the opportunity to compete for the win when we go up there.
Okay, that's fantastic. That's the Chevrolet Silverado 250. That will take place Sunday, September the 3rd at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. So just a few weeks from now is the race that you've had circled, and that's pretty cool. And talk a little bit about working at Kyle Busch Motorsports. And we know that Kyle Busch is a great mentor. He spends a lot of time helping new drivers that are coming up in the sport. Can you talk to that just a little bit?
Yeah, just running for KBM. It's a pretty cool opportunity. Actually, one of a lifetime opportunity that I'm very thankful for, just being able to be in the position to be able to race for them and coming up through the ranks, racing late models and K&N and just getting to that level was a dream come true. And then to move up to the truck series, it's even better. But definitely a lot more preparation now. I'd say before the K&N series, I didn't. Sorry, I'm outside. It's raining right now and thundering. But just a lot more preparation now at the truck level. So it's been a lot of hard work, and it's kind of a rude awakening for me at the beginning of the year. But starting to get into a rhythm and starting to really jive with all my guys. So it's been really good these last couple of weeks. We've had a lot of speed every racetrack we go to. Now it's just on me. I actually had a one-on-one meeting with my boss, Kyle, and today, and just talking about moving forward and what I need to do. So it's been pretty good.
Okay. James, back to you.
Yeah, we'll switch things up again. We'll get it off of racing because Noah Gregson, believe it or not, is quite the interesting character. He had a wasabi challenge earlier. Now, that gave you quite the following. As you may know, just by doing a simple challenge, how are you going to take your challenges to the next level? Is this going to be a regular weekly thing that you're going to create? What kind of challenges do you have in mind to put on your and post on your social media?
That's kind of a secret, James. I would tell you, but I don't want anybody to kind of steal my ideas, and that's why it's kind of heat of the moment kind of deal. Might have to do something with you. I remember you did the Max Heat Challenge, and that was where you turned the heat up really high in your car, and you drove for like 30 minutes. It was pretty unnecessary in my opinion, but I tried it and sweated really bad. So I don't know.
That was with friend Reed Wilson. Maybe you can start a national challenge. I mean, we've had the Ice Bucket Challenge in the past. I mean, there's been multiple challenges, Cinnamon Challenge. It's challenges. But has a NASCAR driver ever started a challenge that went viral and went national? And I think that Noah Gregson is the person to do it. So, you can't give us any ideas, not even describing it, but just any ideas of what the baseline is for your plan to get that viral NASCAR challenge.
I haven't really come up with one yet. I still need to, but really, it's like I said before, all heat of the moment stuff, it's kind of one of those deals where I'm sitting at home, bored on Twitter, twiddling my thumbs, laying in bed, you know, and got to give the fans on Twitter something to look forward to.
Now, you have fans on Instagram as well, and you do Instagram live videos. What's the most interesting thing and the best reaction that you've gotten from fans on Instagram live?
Instagram live. That's a tough one. I just like to be myself on there. I like to have a little fun, answer some questions. I don't know. People really dig the Instagram live deal, which I don't know. I think I'm – whenever I'm bored, I normally go on there and just talk about nothing for the most part, and people love it. So I don't know. I guess that's pretty much the best reactions I've ever had is just talking to the fans.
Yeah, you've talked to a fan, Reed Wilson, and you've actually had some interactions with him. You want to describe any? Because I was noticing that from a distance, from a third person point of view. You have any comments on any captions with that?
Yeah, Reed Wilson and I we were racing pretty hard at the old New Hampshire Motor Speedway, and he I don't know what he was thinking. He went off into turn one. In New Hampshire, and he Michael McDowell'd his car like he did at Texas. So I don't know what he was really doing there at New Hampshire. He hit Dominique and tore that thing up pretty bad. But anyways, long story short, Reed and I, we've kind of mixed it up over the chat, but we're pretty cool in person. I saw him at the Sherry Pollock's Catwalk for a Cause event, and we were eating little Caesar salad bites at the salad bar up there at that event. So we're pretty close buddies now. We raced each other in K&N. He's moved me out of the way a couple times at Greenville Pickens, and we just like to have a lot of fun. You know, we go go-karting at Victory Lane Karting and try and mix it up. We've seen you over there. By the way, James, where are you living now?
I actually live with that person, Reed Wilson. So this is you'd be surprised for anybody listening at home how connected the racing world is, and Noah kind of takes it to another extent where he will tease other drivers and make fun of them, but at the same time it's all fun and games, and it's just being friends, and it's fun for the fans to watch. They were interacting with their conversation on Instagram Live, but yeah, so the racing world's all connected. We're all friends. You know, it's competitors on the track, but friends off the track for the most part for most drivers. And it's cool to see Noah take it to another level and interact with the drivers. I'm sure that's helping out with his major fan base.
I try. I mean, we're all buddies. James, we got to hang out soon, buddy, and maybe do some Instagram Lives. And maybe I got to interview you next time on Instagram Live. I really enjoy, this is my favorite show so far just because you've been on it. I always enjoy catching up with you. You've made my night so far. In all seriousness.
Awesome. That's my job here. But I'll give the questions back over.
We need you on Sirius XM and replacing Dave Moody.
That may be down the road when he decides to retire. But anyways, I'll give the questions back. I'm sure she wants to ask a few more. But this has been a good interview. This has been good. I hope it's interesting for those at home.
I hope so, too. I'll tell you what, I'm being entertained. I've enjoyed it so far, so that's always a good thing. Okay, I want to ask you, Noah, about your teammates at KBM. Or if there's any other drivers that you've kind of worked with as you're making the transition between the Camping World Truck Series and the K&N Pro Series, are there any drivers that you kind of work with in that regard?
Yeah, I really spent a lot of my time just talking with my driver coach and spotter, Brandon McReynolds. We used to mix it up in the K&N West Series, and then now he's helping me out back here on the truck side. So I really lean on him just for advice. You know, he's really been around racing for a good while now, pretty much all his life. And he's a really good buddy of mine. So I lean on him. I lean on really my crew chief and for the most part, Cole Custer, since he raced the Truck Series, has got a couple wins in there. So he knows how to get it done in the Truck Series, and has won a couple races. So just trying to watch as much film and talk to as many people as I can is really the most most beneficial to me.
Okay. Well, and I think it's great that you are working with some of the other drivers as well. I'm not nearly as entertaining as James is here, but it's been great talking with you. I'm going to hand the mic back over to James. I'm sure he's got a few more questions for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll bring it back to racing here because, you know, we got away from it, and that's great. I get to show some people what Noah Gregson is as a personality. But so far, what race for you has been the closest to a win? Where do you feel – was it Martinsville? What track did you feel that you had the car to win and you got really close, just things didn't work out to put yourself into victory lane?
Yeah, really, I feel like we've had a couple solid runs. We've had fast trucks. I'd say Iowa or Dover were my two closest opportunities to getting that first win. Really, at Dover at the beginning of the year, we had a truck that was capable of winning. We were fastest in both practices, and we were running fifth when we had to make green flag pit stops. Actually, I think we were running third, and we had to make a green flag pit stop. We cycled back out to second, and Chase Briscoe had a problem on pit road, and he had a tire come off, and we were trapped a lap down. So ended up finishing a lap down, but we were racing with the leaders and everything, so we definitely had a shot at winning that one. So that one was pretty big.
Yeah, it just takes you know, everything to go right, especially in races that are so competitive as the Truck Series. And I understand that, but it's good that you're close. That's the biggest thing that a lot of people might not understand is even when somebody doesn't have a win, being close is just the next best thing, and that will lead to victories later once everything starts to go right. You adapt to the series, adapt to the cars you're in, and I believe that Mr. Gregson over here is going to compete for wins at the end of the year. After all this experience they've gathered up throughout the season. Now, the next question is, you're from Las Vegas, Nevada, for those who don't know. You moved from Las Vegas to North Carolina here in the Charlotte area. What has that transition been like for you? Who have you met? What are the differences between the two areas? What are your thoughts and takes on the transition from moving from Vegas to North Carolina?
Hey, can you hear all that lightning and everything out here?
Yeah,
yes.
Take care of yourself out there.
Yeah, it is raining hard back here. I mean, I'm just sitting in the house right now, and it's raining heavy. So, but no, that's actually a big difference, is it rains a lot more here than it does in Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, it hardly rains, and here I feel like it rains or sprinkles at least every day. So, pretty much that. I can't go to, Taco Bell past 9 o'clock here because everything shuts down early, which sucks because I like Taco Bell a lot. But I'm trying to work on my figure, so it's probably a little bit better for me that I can't have Taco Bell. So, really, just everything closes early here. That's the main difference from here in Las Vegas. I kind of like it. For some parts, it's, like, pretty back here, but I like Vegas because you can go, like, on a Monday night and go get some Taco Bell, like, at 10 at night, and everything's pretty much open.
Okay, what about Waffle House? You're here now. I'm from California. I adapted to not having things open, but I have filled my needs and desires with Waffle House. Have you done the same?
No, I'm not a big awful waffle kind of guy at the Waffle House. That's not.
Hey.
I'm not big on that. Maybe a late night, and there's nothing else open coming back from a race, but it's not the greatest set on thing.
Well, maybe cookout. Maybe cookout for you.
Oh, I'm definitely a cookout guy. Just
there you go.
Gotta get a milkshake, a big double burger tray with the cheese quesadilla and some sweet and sour sauce, and we're on our way.
Yep,
sounds
that's,
good.
I guess it's interesting because I went through the same transition, and I did it a little bit sooner than Noah, but I moved here when I was 17 years old, and the difference, and Vegas and in Napa, California, where I live, a little bit different, but similar because they're from the West Coast. It is a huge transition for drivers coming from the West Coast to the East Coast to adapt to the changes. I mean, in terms of friends and family, which I'm not familiar, but I don't think Noah moved out here with his family. You have difference in eating habits and what you're eating. You know, there's so many areas and locations you don't know, you're unfamiliar with, and that's something that I feel like not a lot of people address is when people move from all around the world, not just around the United States, but around the world, to come here in Charlotte to be part of the center of racing. And you have Noah, who's you know, over 2,000 miles away from home, and it must be quite the difference for him.
Yes, yeah, it's difficult not having my mom or dad here, I guess, to do the dishes and do the laundry and all that stuff, you know, but it's just part of growing up, I guess. I probably need to get a house cleaner here soon because it's getting a little messy.
Well, Noah, we're glad you were able to be a part of our show here tonight. I will tell you, both you and James have been very entertaining here, and we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on. I agree with you. It's one of my favorite episodes with you so far. Before you go, let's make sure the fans know how they can follow you. And I want to give you a chance to do any shout-outs if you want have any shout-outs that you want to do before you go.
Yeah, well, first, before I go, or after I go, I'm going to order some Papa John's and get a pizza so I can get all carved up before the big dance on Wednesday at Bristol Motor Speedway. I'm just thankful for the opportunity to run with Kyle Busch Motorsports. And I want to give a shout-out to Zane and Mikey for letting me relax in his hot tub tonight. Over at his house, and yeah, just follow me along on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat at Noah Gregson. Follow Zane Smith, 77, Venturini Motorsports racing driver, and then Michael Womack. He's going to be running the ARCA race at Road America here, his first stock car race. So we're all going to be mixing it up together, me and Zane and the Venturini Mobiles. And Mikey's going to be with Mason Mitchell Motorsports. So we're going to go back to our legend car racing days with Riley Herbst, too. So it's going to we're going to Mikey, me, and Zane are going to be having a thrandom, like a three-way tandem down the front straightaway at Road America trying to set some new
times. Definitely something to look forward to there. We hope to have you in Victory Lane so you can come back and be a part of our winner circle here, Noah. It's been a while, but I'm pretty confident that you're going to be there before it's all said and done. And, again, we really appreciate you being here tonight. Have fun. I know you will. And we'll look forward to chatting with you the next time, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Thank you, James. You made this show the best one.
Awesome. Thank you, Noah. Thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Peace out, guys.
All right. That was Noah Gregson. I think he's had a pretty good year for making the transition between the Can-Am Pro Series and the Camping World Truck Series, James. I know he's got to be disappointed because he's used to being out there winning. But at the same time, I think he's had a pretty fantastic season so far.
I'm really cheering for Noah to win races because not only is he a very talented driver, but as you can tell, he's also a great personality that I feel like the sport would really need. Once he starts getting more into the spotlight, winning races, moving on into the Xfinity Series and possibly the Cup Series later in the years to come, I really look forward to seeing him as a personality that thrives in NASCAR, because he has everything that a NASCAR driver needs and more, from a marketing standpoint, from a fan base standpoint, and now as a competitive standpoint, you know, winning races coming soon. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Noah move through the ranks and be very successful, so everybody can see that personality, kind of, you know, grasp onto it, and then elevate to the sport to a new level.
I totally agree with you, and I'm sure that we are going to see him make those moves through NASCAR and to be right up there competing for victories. Let's get into our next guest, because I know that you talked to him about being on the show here tonight, and give us a little bit of a background here of Matt Bell.
So Matt Bell, as people that are just tuning in and didn't hear the beginning, Matt Bell is the driver of the 90 Xfinity car last weekend at Mid-Ohio. He was a NASCAR Xfinity driver back in 2012, where he made two career starts. He's an IMSA driver, which I find is interesting, because we will be able to see both sides, a driver comparing how it is to drive a stock car, an Xfinity car, on road course rather than a sports car in the IMSA series, and traveling around full time for that. He has one win and one pole in IMSA, and he has been a part of the IMSA series for 3 years. He drives for Chevrolet and Camaro with Stevenson Motorsports, I believe. And I know him as a background. He driver coached me getting into a stock car on road course. Before I did that, he was the one that came out and rode right seat with me and taught me everything I need to know around Sonoma Raceway in a Mazda Miata. So I'm looking forward to talking to him, seeing, you know, how he feels after that race. I know he was a topic of conversation because he had that awful wreck at Mid-Ohio where he ended up into the tire barriers.
Yeah.
But his car was really fast before that. It was really competitive. He had moved up quite a few positions, I believe 9. He was in 18th when he crashed and had that hydraulic brake failure. But, you know, he's coming on the show. Hopefully he gets into a car at Road America and we can see him again, and then people can listen in and then be following him in the race. Like, hey, I heard him on Fan for Racing Radio. Let's pay attention to him and see how he does. So really, really looking forward to him and being able to compare the two divisions from each other.
Okay, and I thought he's a great choice to be on the show tonight, and I'm glad you were able to talk to him. Talk a little bit about your relationship with him as your driver coach, because it's kind of interesting that he was coaching you as a driver and racing in the IMSA. Were there other series that he raced in before IMSA?
I believe so. We'll talk about it more once he gets onto the show. But during my time with him in 2014, he was an IMSA driver, and he was competitively racing in road course and stuff. And he was there the entire 2 days that we were there. And he taught me how to. I really had no idea how to shift. Breaking points, turn-in points. It was my first time on a road course. So my relationship with him was he taught me how to drive. When I went to an IMSA car race last year at VIR, I had the opportunity to see him in action and actually driving in an IMSA car race. And he really helped me to elevate my performance when I went to Sonoma, and then I ran very well at Utah Motorsports Park. So if there's a driver out there, a young driver, I'm sure Matt Bell might be a contact of interest if they're getting into road course racing. He helped me, and maybe he could help some others, but he's now going to have more experience in a stock car, which is going to be interesting. So he's done very well in his career, and like I said, I'm looking really forward to talking to him and comparing the differences between the two series, stock cars to sports cars.
Okay, and I think that it is going to be an interesting interview here with him. I'm sure you'll make it as entertaining as you have the other two interviews there. But a lot of people may not have known Matt Bell within the NASCAR circles before, so this is a nice opportunity for us to kind of get to know him a little bit. And understanding that he does have another road course race that's coming up. He's here now. James, if you want to go ahead and do the introduction.
Hey, Matt, how's it going? As you know, James, and I'm co-hosting the show. I wanted to ask you how you're doing today.
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I don't know if you heard a little bit of our piece of our Noah Gregson interview, but this has been an interesting show, and I know I let you know that I had an interesting question for you. But we'll get into the racing stuff first. You know, the obvious question that I have are what the challenges are for you that you can convey to the listeners driving stock cars compared to racing in the IMSA series and driving sports cars.
I think the biggest difference is that, you know, these GT3 cars and the GT4 cars, I mean, they're, while they are production based, I mean, they're purpose built to be kind of cutting edge. Essentially, they do a lot to try to get these cars to be kind of the latest and greatest technology. They have paddle shifters. The Audi doesn't even have a clutch pedal. It has a clutch paddle. It basically relies on auto clutch to get you out of pit lane. Traction control, ABS, all that sort of stuff. While the stock cars are sort of a blast from the past. They haven't changed in essentially 30 or 40 years, and there's something kind of fun about that. There's something rough and interesting and exciting about it. You know, when you make a gear shift, that's you making it. You know, that's your hand actually operating and putting a selector up against another gear, and you have to time the shift. When you hit the brake, there's no power assist. You're feeling everything that car has. You get a really good feel for the grip of the car. At the same time, they're quite a bit heavier. They use very old-fashioned suspension technology. There's a lot of technology finding its way in, but I don't know. It's interesting. It's very different, but at the same time, going fast is going fast. So it's kind of a fun way to have to translate how you know how to go fast, or you've learned to go fast from these GT cars, and try to sort of make that fit what the stock car really likes.
It's really interesting, you know, competing in such a high level. You know, you're really fed to the wolves going out and trying to apply your knowledge from what road course racing is in your world to stock cars at such a high level like the Xfinity series. You did pretty well. Want to describe the beginning of the race before you had those mechanical issues?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of funny. So the start happens, and in our car, for the most part, just we didn't have that much time to set it up. The weekend was basically condensed. It was already a short weekend, only being 2 days, but then with weather, it basically made it so that we were going to have a short, I believe it was a 45-minute practice, and then qualifying, and then go right in the race. And one of the interesting things about NASCAR compared to the sports car series is they don't let you do absolutely anything to the car. In fact, they watch you like pretty intently to make sure that you're not messing with your car between practice and qualifying or I guess between qualifying and the race. So, we didn't really get a great chance to fine tune the car, and I was still kind of fine tuning myself, only getting about 7 laps in practice. So the start of the race was funny because I go into turn one and I pick up a ton of understeer, which was kind of the trend that we had in the laps in practice, and then that obviously followed to a less extent into the race. So I got pushed around a little bit in turn one, but then going down to turn two, the keyhole, that kind of hairpin right-hander, everyone, for whatever reason, just dove to the inside. Nobody realized that you can actually carry a ton of speed around the outside of the keyhole. And I did an okay job making sure my tires were up to temperature, and so I just dove in and passed something like 9 cars or something like that. So Just went around the outside of them. I knew I wasn't going to be able to hold my own for the whole deal. I obviously didn't know I was going to go out the way I did, but I figured, you know, with the car the way it was, where it had lots of understeer at the apex, but was really good off the corner, super stable off the corner, I could probably hold people behind me, but I probably wasn't going to be making up any spots. So that's kind of what we were doing. I'm sure I was pissing off a few people back there. I know they were giving me a few bumps at the apex of the lower speed corners, but then I would gap them by a couple of car lengths down each straightaway. So it was interesting. It wasn't ideal, but I, you know, we were doing okay.
Yeah, you guys were doing a great job. And, you know, it broke my heart. If anybody didn't know, I was at Mid-Ohio watching. And as you may have heard or watched, Matt was involved in a very intense accident where he lost hydraulic brakes, if I'm not mistaken. Now, after a hard hit like that, is that the largest impact you've made in your career? If not, what is?
I think it is. I've had a couple good hits. I've had a pretty similar one, maybe within 10 mile an hour of the hit that I had at Mid-Ohio, and actually same, really similar failure when we were testing the Z28 Camaros. I had a brake rotor actually explode, so it's like a hand grenade going off under the fender, and but same result. You basically lose all your braking, so it shot off the track, hit the wall at probably 80 mile an hour. I'm estimating I hit the wall at Mid-Ohio mm-hmm. between 90 and 100 mile an hour. So I mean, it was a little bit heavier impact, or a little bit more speed, but actually it felt like a harder impact simply because I think I actually did get up on top of the tires and actually hit the concrete wall, actually moved the concrete wall. So it was a good hit, but you know, the whole crash to me took forever. I mean, it was like 5 seconds in my world. So I had I actually felt like I had a long time to think about it. You know, I felt the brake go away. You know, pedal goes to the floor. I remember thinking, I'm going to try to get the pedal off the floor. So I stuck my foot under the brake. Kind of simultaneously, I realized I was skipping across the gravel. And I had a pretty conscious mind to basically realize, okay, I'm probably going to hit this wall. So I just braced. I pulled my feet back, kind of pulled my hands up toward my chest, pressed my head against the seat, and then took the impact and kind of opened my eyes and realized I was looking at the sky. So I mean, it actually didn't feel as bad as it looked. But then obviously when I realized half my car is kind of gone in a way that I wasn't expecting, and realized I was like 4 feet in the air up against the tires, kind of quickly understood that the car was pretty messed up and probably wasn't going to continue.
Yeah, that's just a testament to the safety innovations, especially hearing your reaction in you know, fans have never been in a wreck like that in a stock car. To hear your reaction and how safe that you felt inside the car when it looks so terrifying and just so violent from the outside, it really is a testament to the safety innovations that they put into stock cars. But we'll pass the questions on over. I'm sure we have some other questions from someone besides me. So we'll get some questions in here and see what she has to say.
Okay. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being on the show here tonight. I wanted to kind of get into, I know you're going to be racing at Road America after another road course race after racing this weekend at Mid-Ohio. Can you talk just a little bit about the differences between those two tracks from a racer's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the two tracks, I have to look at the schedule actually, because I think, unfortunately, I think my IMSA race might be on the same weekend as Road America, but the two tracks are really different, especially with the, especially in these stock cars. You know, Mid-Ohio, while there are a few really heavy braking areas, Road America has probably three or four more really, really heavy braking areas. And compared to the sports cars that I'm used to racing at Road America, the first time I drove the one of these, back then it was a Nationwide car at Road America, the first thing that strikes you is how much longer it takes to slow that car down, especially once the brakes are hot, they're starting to fade. I mean, you know, we're probably boy, 800, 900 feet further down in the sports cars, and then you have to start braking with the stock cars when the brakes are hot. So, and there's not really the sensation of slowing. You're kind of like I wonder if we're going to make it every time you hit the brakes. But that's the first thing that really hits you when you go to Road America for the first time is kind of the realization that braking actually is going to take some effort in these cars versus maybe the other types of cars. Road America has a nice rhythm to it. That's not to say Mid-Ohio doesn't, but Mid-Ohio has that hairpin in it. It's kind of an interesting, really short front straightaway, followed by another short straightaway, followed by actually the longest straightaway, which you know, kind of leads into a weird complex. But, you know, Mid-Ohio kind of feels more like, in another sports car course, Lime Rock. It feels kind of like a bull ring. It's not that small, but it just seems like the laps come through very quickly. Well, Road America is one of the longest tracks in North America, so that one you feel like in a 40-minute session you're not seeing the same lap too many times compared to a place like Mid Ohio.
Okay, that's fantastic. I love the way you're describing things, not just with the differences in the tracks, but as James had mentioned, you know, with what happened with the incident there in Mid-Ohio. Do you know when your next race is with the Xfinity Series?
I don't right now. You know, my primary end of the sport is with IMSA. You know, I'm full-time with Stevenson Motorsport, and definitely honored that I have that opportunity. I love doing the stock car stuff. I'd love to do more of it so that I feel like I'm doing a better job with it. These weekends are so stinted, especially when they have weather. The last two events I've done with you know, that kind of lower level stock car stuff has really been affected by the weather, and I just don't feel like I ever have time in the weekend to kind of get my bearings and that sort of thing. But you know, I'm talking to these guys over at King Autosport. I'd love to, if I don't get a chance this season, I'd love to already start talking about them, talking to them, and talking about getting a sponsorship so that I can do more of the road course races next year. They've prepared a really good car. These cars are just, I mean, you know, there's this sort of view from the sports car world, and especially the formula car world, that these stock cars just must not be any fun to drive. But I think it's the exact opposite. They're challenging, right? But they're also so much fun. The way they're dynamic. I mean, they weigh so much, and they've got these tiny little brakes, and they've got these, I don't know if they're bias ply tire, but they feel like a bias ply tire, and just tons of horsepower and a 4-speed Jericho, and it's just, I don't know, there's something, it's just so much fun about wheeling these big heavy monsters around a road course. And I actually had a couple of conversations with some of the other drivers there, and even they were expressing they'd love to see more road courses added to the schedule. So hopefully I'll have more career in the sport if they go ahead and do that.
Okay. Well, I tell you, it is, with the fact that the NASCAR drivers are getting better at racing the road courses, I think the racing has really improved on the road courses within NASCAR. And you're right, a lot of fans would love to see more road courses on the schedule, as well as it's good to hear that the drivers are looking for that too. James was telling us earlier that you were coaching him a little bit on the road courses.
Yeah, he didn't need much, to be honest. I mean, I'm sure it sounds like I'm just kind of buttering him up, but seriously, he as far as people I've coached and how quickly the people in the day sort out really what they need to do, James is one of the quickest to it. Actually, absolutely, he was the quickest to it, especially considering he hadn't done much of any road course racing before that, or driving for that matter. So I mean, I think that the breed of driver that's coming out now, that's starting to find their way into careers, has well, they first of all have to be ahead of the people that are already in it. And I think that's easier now because of because you can watch videos on the internet, because you have simulators, because there's so much more knowledge about the end of the sport that you're coming into. And but it still takes this kind of ingenuity to access that information and digest that information and put that information into use. That's still the most important thing that a driver needs to do. It's really simple to show someone a set of data and say, this is why you're slow. It's still quite difficult for that driver to then look at that data, figure out what that means, what that should be feeling like, and go ahead and make that happen. And you know, James is one of those pretty talented guys that for sure has that ability to not just understand what you're trying to tell him about you know, how this works, the science behind it, but then put that into play. And I'm certain that it's guys like him that are going to take over the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, I'm going to pass the mic back over to James. So, go ahead, James.
Wow. I'm so flattered over here. I'm tearing up a little bit. But anyways, yeah. Thank you for the comments. We're gonna take this away from racing just for a second.
Oh boy.
You still live in California, correct?
I do.
Okay, then I'm gonna switch this question up for you, just like I would for myself. So, assuming there was an earthquake, and everybody, including animals or family, friends, are safe in this earthquake, but your house is collapsing, so get the image in your head, and you could carry out three things that you have inside of your house. What would those three things be that you would save from a toppling house?
Wow, that is a really good question. Look at you. Wow, that is like a, I'm you know what's funny is I'm sitting, so probably the first thing, just looking around, is my simulator, because I don't get the opportunity to drive too many things a year. I'm pretty tied down with everything, and that's actually probably the first thing I would take is it'd be difficult to walk out with it, to be fair. But assuming I have like one of these like motherly strength, like lift the car off their child things going on, I'm probably grabbing the computer somehow, the entire simulator, and throwing it out the window. Boy, what next? Probably just, you know, my few, and I know you're trying very hard to get this away from racing, but you know, probably my few racing mementos that I have. I have a few trophies that I've been lucky enough to win. I have a few of my old helmets, and they all bring me, you know, good memories. It's one of my favorite just things to walk by. It's just to remember the good times I've had. I'm still obviously having a lot of fun times, but it's always fun to kind of have a memory in visual form. So probably number two is at least one of my old helmets, or whichever trophy's closest. And then number three, this is probably surprising because I'm in California, I'm probably grabbing my boomstick. I've got a gun safe, and I have one gun in there. I got pretty interested in competitive clay shooting, and so I've got my Browning Satori down there, and it's all ready to go, ready in its case. I'm probably grabbing that because at least I'll have something else fun to do if my house collapses.
Really interesting. That's why I asked that. We got to our third thing here, and now tell us about your clay shooting career. How did this start? You know, what are you doing this competitively in events, or is it something as a hobby you go out to do for fun?
You know, unfortunately, it's kind of slowed down a lot for me. I went for the first time. I actually took like a year break from it, and it wasn't necessarily because I wanted to. I just had a ton of other stuff going on, and you know, the place that I like to shoot most often is probably 40 minute drive away from me, so it's kind of difficult to get down there. But I'd shot plenty of different guns over my life. You know, my family, you know, even though they're in California, they grew up with guns, so I got to play with them. And Actually, one of our neighbors up at a family cabin was an FBI. He was some kind of agent that's allowed all sorts of exciting weaponry, and so we got to shoot that. So I've always been kind of interested in it, but I'd never actually shot a shotgun, believe it or not. And so when I finally got the opportunity to, a friend of mine, a guy named John Flesher, let me go out to a five stand. Just kind of a friendly competition, and shot a couple of his guns, and I was just instantly hooked. And it really is one of the few things that I've done that requires the kind of mental focus to do it over and over again that is similar to racing. Every shot you take kind of feels like a lap in the race car. There's so many things that, there's so many more things that can go wrong that you can maybe miscalculate or just think of something else or look at it the wrong way and you miss that shot, then they're already go right. And that is really a great sort of metaphor for racing. And so I started using it kind of as mental training, just trying to be consistent with something. And it's obviously something fun. And so I picked it up pretty quick, very quickly decided to spend a ton of money on getting all the equipment because I never do something a little bit. I'm a big idiot. Instead of just renting stuff, I decide I'm just going to go spend like 10 grand on all this random stuff that basically makes me look like a giant knob anyway, because I'm like wearing the vest and like the glasses. And I just look like nobody thinks I look cool. Right. I think I look awesome, but everyone else is looking probably like I'm the guy that like shows up at the golf course with like vintage Scottish golf wear. Right. Like I'm that guy. So, I've had a good time with it. I went for the first time again a couple weeks ago, and I'm probably going to try picking it up again. And to answer your question, I've done, I think, three or four competitions, and the problem with the competitions that kind of upsets me and made my ego itch a little bit was you have to start down in these really low classes. And the only way you can move up out of these classes, regardless of how good you are or how hard you've tried, you can only move up one class at a time. And if not many people show up, they don't classify you up a class. And so it just takes like probably 10 or 12, weekends dedicated to shooting to really move yourself up into a class where you think you're going to have fun and be competitive. Instead, I was kind of shooting in the Girl Scout class every time I went out, but I got frustrated pretty quick. So now I just go out with friends and shoot at stuff and, switch it up. I'll try to shoot left-handed or all sorts of weird stuff. Try to, there's a report pair where one clay goes, and when the gun goes off, the second one goes. I'll try to take it as true so they both go at the same time. So I just goof off with it, but it's still great mental training, and it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, the mental training part of it, I really relate to because I know a lot of drivers use different sports and hobbies to train themselves mentally and keeping their mind always active and ready to get back into a race car. I personally use golf, and I know there's a lot out there. I've never heard shooting before, so that's really interesting to me, and maybe there might be some drivers out there that go clay shooting and try it out, and maybe it works for them. So great to talk to you, though. I know we're getting to our closing remarks here, so I appreciate that you coming on to the show and being able to talk to us, and I hope you had a good time, and we asked good questions. You had an enjoying time, but yeah, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling me up and having me come on. You guys have been asking outstanding questions. Anytime you guys are doing this, just give me a call. And James, next time you're out here in California, let's go shoot some shotgun.
Awesome. Sounds good. Will do.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for coming on, Matt. We really appreciate it. And, when's your next race so we can shout that out and fans can tune in?
It is, I think, the 25th through 27th, so not this weekend, but next weekend. It's at VIR.
Okay. Of course, it's a road course race, and it should be a lot of fun. And the IMSA series is all part of NASCAR, and fans need to tune into that and give it a watch because it's a fantastic series, and again, we're really happy that you were here to talk with us tonight, and we'll look forward to talking to you again somewhere down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
See you guys later.
All right, James, that was Matt, and we really had a good time chatting with him.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I think it was a great show altogether. So far, we're getting close to that ending time. We had Chris Eggleston talked about his dominant season so far. Noah Gregson, I don't even know where to begin with that. Just an interesting interview overall. And then Matt Bell, you know, something I didn't even know about him. You know, shooting clay and driving a race car go hand in hand, and they have a mental overlaying from each other. And it's just really interesting to hear about what drivers have to say about the track and also off the track. And I think that was a pretty interesting all around. And I appreciate the show. I really enjoy being on here co-hosting. And like I said, this was a great show. And I'm looking forward to being on here next Monday, co-hosting, and then the following Monday after that. So we'll have some more guests. We'll have some more interesting personalities and drivers on here. And same thing as always, asking them interesting questions. And regardless whether it's on or off the track.
Definitely buckle up and tune in, because it's going to be a fun run here with James Bickford as co-host here on Fan for Racing Radio. James, we didn't get much of a review done of the races this weekend, so I don't know if we need to add more time to the show in order to get that into the agenda here. But really appreciate you being on the show tonight. It's a little bit of a breath of fresh air here on Fan for Racing Radio. And I tell you what, I said it before, I'm going to say it again. I was certainly entertained with tonight's show, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks here with you. We will be back here on Thursday night for our Fan for Racing NASCAR weekend preview with co-host Jay, MJ Huseman, and that should be a good show as well, where we're previewing the upcoming weekend of racing, and then James and I will be right back here next Monday night with the review of the weekend of racing and some interviews as well. So, James, any parting remarks before we close out the show here?
Like you said, going over the review of the weekend, you had a great truck race at Michigan. I think it's awesome when they go to those 2 mile tracks, and then the downforce and the hole they punch through the air just creates some really interesting racing, some three wide battles. The drivers are really having to work the air and work everything around them, as well as going at a very high rate of speed. I believe they get up to 200 miles per hour. And we had a driver that's finishing in the top 10 there, Bubba Wallace, winning and coming home with a win. And then my race that I was at with the NASCAR Xfinity Series, like we recapped, Sam Hornish Jr. with a pole and a win, having an opportunity and then capitalizing on that. The young and up-and-coming talent, not only in the trucks and Xfinity, but now you also have the young up-and-coming talent in the NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Series. It's you know, you had three drivers that are very young: Chris Buescher, Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, and even Kyle Larson. Four in the top 10 that are just young mm-hmm. drivers, you know, racing their way into the top 10 at a track like Michigan, where it isn't easy. As you can see, you had a veteran Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch hitting the wall in practice, and even more people just on the edge. And these drivers are able to compensate and handle it and finish well at tracks where they really need to. So it's interesting for me to see the overall talent changing in our sport, and seeing that the new drivers moving up into the series and finishing well. And I'm sure in the next 1 or 2 years, It's going to be even more new names and more people to watch. I think as a fan, me personally being a fan of the sport, seeing those personalities come out and making the sport that much more interesting. So a lot of things to be excited about. And that's kind of my ending and closing thoughts. And just making sure everybody's caught up to speed after this exciting race weekend in the NASCAR National Series and even in the Cane and West.
Yes, indeed. And, the ARCA Racing Series is going to be racing this weekend at the Illinois State Fairgrounds, and that's going to be a dirt race. And I know fans love to see the cars race on dirt, and that will certainly happen this weekend with the ARCA Racing Series. Now, I didn't get a chance to really talk to you too much about this, but something for fans to look forward to in the next episode here, next Monday night. I want to kind of get into a little bit with you, James, about the NASCAR Next program, and because I think that program has done a lot to develop the drivers that are coming up in this series to help them to be successful. And I want to get your perspective on that in the next episode. Okay.
Of course, and I'm here to talk about it. But, just on a quick touch of it, it is a great program, and we'll speak more about it next week. But I'll talk about how it helped me as a driver and how I feel like it's helping young and up-and-coming drivers going into National Series racing, which it's used to develop for. But anyways, great show. We have Bristol next up on the schedule for National Series racing. Cane and West at Douglas County Speedway, August 26th, and Langley Speedway, September 2nd, for the K&N East Division. So a lot of things to look forward to, and I can't wait to see what this weekend has to bring for racing and what we'll have to talk about next Monday.
I'm sure it'll be a lot. And, Dan, I'm definitely looking forward to it, especially when you're talking about Bristol Motor Speedway. There's always some good conversation following those races. So, James, again, thank you so much for being the co-host tonight and for the next couple of weeks. We'll look forward to talking to you. Are you going to be at the track this weekend?
I will be. I'm working with a company, Experiential Events Group, EEG, at Bristol Motor Speedway, working with Toyota, and I believe I will be jumping Toyota Tundras on jumps and also driving Toyota Camrys and giving people ride-alongs. So that's how I'll spend my weekend, and I'll be back on it Monday, and I'll talk a little bit about that experience too. But great to work with a driving experience company as a professional driver, and I'll touch a little bit more basis on what I'm doing after I figure out what I'm doing and on Monday. So I'm really looking forward to the show though.
Okay, so am I, James. You take care. Enjoy your week and the weekend of racing, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Take care now.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.